This episode of Voices of the Elephant is brought to you by EngineYard, the leading platform as a service. Our Orchestra PHP platform is the easiest way for you to deploy scalable PHP apps in the cloud. And we love the PHP community.
Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. We're here today with my friend Luke Stokes. Now, this is unusual for me because Luke lives right up the road from me. So this is probably the closest interview I've ever done. Luke, glad to have you here talking with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, Luke, you are the co-founder of a service called, or a platform called FoxyCart. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, it's an e-commerce shopping cart system.
Awesome. Yes, I actually have an account on it and use it for one of my books. So that is – it's a very fun – it's a very interesting platform to work on because I'm not really into that type of application. And so when I got ready to set it up, I thought, this is going to be difficult. And lo and behold, somebody's got a WordPress plugin that just makes that dead simple. And it's like, yeah, answer these questions, boom. Oh, wait, it's done. Okay. So, okay. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about your FoxyCart experience. Let's dive right in. When you built FoxyCart, obviously you had the choice of many different languages to build on, many different web-based languages to build on. Why did you choose PHP to build?
Well, I'm probably standard story a lot of developers have. You know, they started with HTML, transitioned to JavaScript, and eventually were like, wait, I need to do a guest book or something, however long ago that was. And so they eventually discover PHP. And so that's kind of my story as well. That was my first language that was a real programming language. And I got to kind of tinker with it for my own personal website, learn how it works. You know, I built different things while I was in college and started doing side work with it, started making money on it. And I said, hey, this is great. And in college, I had some experience with Java. By the time I got a quote unquote real job, I was doing a lot of legacy ASP, which I didn't enjoy much at all. And it's just a really kind of go-to language for me. Like I said, it was the first one I kind of cut my teeth on, and I really enjoy it, and I always have. And I remember one time I spent a weekend learning Ruby on Rails. I took an existing project, and I thought, well, you know, how difficult will it be to do this in Ruby? And I was really impressed with the scaffolding and a lot of the cool syntax, and, it's really definitely an expressive language. But I found myself, again, getting limited by what I already knew in PHP. Every time I'd want to do something kind of interesting or a little bit off the rails, I'd be like, well, I know, there's all these great array methods, for example, that the PHP has that I just love. And I kind of find myself getting stuck, not so much by the actual work I'm trying to develop, but my lack of kind of experience with the Ruby language. So for PHP, it's just something I'm really, really comfortable with. And so as my buddy, my other co-founder, as we started kind of thinking up this idea of how we could build e-commerce to serve developers, we just kind of started prototyping in the natural language that I was familiar with, using MySQL and PHP, and it just started coming together. And I think another thing that's nice about the language for me is it's kind of, in a way, it's almost grown with me as a developer. As I've better, the first version of FoxyCart was, well, the first couple versions were basically unusable, but the first few versions, very procedural, I can remember the first time I did, we supported subscriptions, and this is just terrible, but this is like 5 years ago, so I can say it, but we would literally do a for loop and re-include the checkout PHP file after stuffing the post array. We just did some crazy, crazy stuff, and we're like, hey, there we go, in an afternoon, we now support subscriptions. And so over time, I kind of figured out some better best practices, became a better developer, rewrote the entire system to be more object-oriented. And I think, Cal, as you've said many times, PHP lets you kind of do something in, 20 lines of code that you can then later, as a prototype, that you can then later pretty easily put behind an entire framework or expand beyond that. So I've been really happy with PHP. And there's a lot of great languages out there. I think it's quite possible if I'd started with a different one, I'd like that one more. But for me, PHP gets it done. And I like some of the new frameworks out there. I've been playing a lot with Silex and some of the other ones out there. They're really powerful, but they don't get in your way.
Yeah. And I've said this before, like you said, PHP just lets me get stuff done. It stays out of my way. And I've looked at, like you, I've looked at other languages and just have not found anything that has the flexibility that I want. Everybody else wants you to do things in a specific way, or you can almost do this, but you know, in PHP I can just hammer something out real quick.
And it's kind of comfortable at this point. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, that favorite shirt or those, yep, you know, favorite jeans you wear. You're just like, man, I understand it. I know it. You know, and occasionally I do have to look at the docs for the order of, you know, inputs to a function, but other than that.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, maybe that's the problem, especially with PHP developers like us that have been doing it for a couple of years, is the barrier to change is so high that there's got to be something really significant. Another language has got to give me something very significant that I just never will get in PHP to make it worthwhile. And so far I've just not found anything like that. You know, I did classic ASP like you, and remember that nightmare. So and I did Java, and my therapist says I don't have to talk about that anymore. So.
Oh gosh, yes. Actually, my last job, I did a lot of Java. Funny enough, I managed a big e-commerce package. So if you could possibly imagine like the worst gigantic Java nightmare, that's pretty much what this is. And the great thing is that the other team members there at that company would always tell me, no, Java isn't so bad. That's just a bad implementation, you know? And I, to some extent, believe them. To some extent, was just like, nah, it's just a little too confusing, a little too too complex for complexity's sake. I didn't get it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a moment real quick. I need to talk about our sponsor, EngineYard. Have you ever played with EngineYard?
I haven't. I just looked at it real briefly. It looks pretty cool, though.
Yeah, they really are. They've got a product out there, Orchestra, for PHP developers, and it's cloud hosting. It's platform as a service. And I believe you were the first person I ever heard say, but I don't know if you invented this, don't build a website or don't build a product, build a platform. That's kind of stuck with me as some sagely advice. And everything I look at, I'm like, can I make this into a platform? Well, EngineYard has a platform. And you know, there's several good cloud hosting platforms out there, no doubt. The thing I like about EngineYard is I'm an old school guy. I'm nice and comfortable where I'm at, and SVN is my comfort zone. Git is not my comfort zone. But EngineYard lets me hook up to my SVN repos. I don't have to switch everything over to Git, you know, and then just tag a branch, push it, and it goes live. And so it just makes my life as a developer easier. Now, I don't know if you've ever run into this problem, but I've had problems with teams before where it gets very popular very quickly. I used to work for my parents, and their website right around July would get very busy because they sold music to churches. And so July is when everybody's looking and buying Christmas music. And we'd get insanely busy. And then it would drop off, and you know, around Christmas time, we were doing good to be using 1% of what we had. Mm-hmm. You know, well, now that I'm no longer doing this, now we have solutions for this, and EngineYard has that auto-scaling feature now. So you know, as traffic builds up, they just add CPUs to my account, and when it comes on, when it traffic drops down, it shrinks back down. I really like that. So. If you've not looked at EngineYard, anybody for our listeners, I encourage you go out in it's EngineYard.com. Take a look at them. They are they're a very good hosting solution, and we're very pleased that they are sponsoring Voices of the Elephant. Okay, let's get back to questions. Question number two. This one. You and I, we used to have coffee every Friday. We don't do anymore, but we need to get back into that habit. But I remember you, while we were doing that, you were going through PCI certification. And I just remember will this ever end? So tell us, what did you learn? And more specifically, what did you learn during the process of being PCI certified? But if you'd known that's what you had to go through, what would you have done differently?
That's a good question. PCI certification is a really long process, especially we're at level one, and that's the level we have to be at because of the, just due to the sheer number of transactions we process every year, Visa and MasterCard, they require that we have the highest level of certification, and it is definitely a huge process. It's one of those things that's it's nice, like Ben Ramsey's someone that we both know that we talk with, and anyone who's gone through it, you can just go, oh yeah, you know, like you've shared a war story at that point. And I'd say probably the number one thing I learned from it is it's so critically important to have an amazing architecture team member. And so Fred Alger is just phenomenal. My business partner and I, we've turned to Fred, and he has owned this process start to finish. He's done incredible documentation, amazing amounts of research. And it's as an owner, it's something you really need to know a lot about. But at the same time, it's phenomenal to have a deep level of trust with someone you can hand it off to and say, okay, you've got to own this and you've got to teach us and educate us through the process. And so now he literally is our PCI expert. When there's any kind of questions, he's done the research. He's looked into all the technical details. He's asked the questions that are like, well, that's kind of a fuzzy one. It really determines how depends on how you interpret it. And then he's gotten clarity on that based on our systems. So I would say it is something you have to own. It is a long-term project that you have to kind of prioritize for. One other thing that we've also learned is it helps to have a great partner in that process. For us, Firehost is a hosting company that we use that we're really proud of because that's kind of the niche that they cover. They give kind of world-class security for your smaller companies. And so you don't have to be a gigantic enterprise company to get that level of security and protection. And what's great too is they give you a great PCI worksheet that kind of says, here's everything that we cover, and here's everything that you're now responsible for. A lot of people are really excited about Amazon Web Services when I think it was 2 years ago, when they said, hey, you can be PCI compliant on our system. And although that's true, you have to build everything yourself. There's so many different aspects of PCI compliance that most people are not familiar with. The common one I tell people that kind of raises some eyebrows is dual factor authentication. So you can't actually be level one compliant unless you have dual factor authentication. And what that means in a practical sense is every time I want to connect to the VPN, I have to log into the system, and then I get this nice little screen and my phone rings. I have to answer my phone. I have to, put in the right code, and then I get to log in. And that's how the system works. So it's not just something you know, it's something you have. And that's an example of something you'd have to build out on your own if you weren't with a partner like Firehost.
And Firehost provides all of that infrastructure for you?
Absolutely,
very nice.
They have that. They have web application firewalls. They have all kinds of different things that are required for PCI compliance. And that's something that, again, you can build it out yourself, but it's going to take more time, and it's going to make that already large project a little bit larger. So we've gotten a lot of benefit out of going with them. Another thing that I really actually kind of enjoyed as part of the process is you need to have penetration testing, which we always kind of, you always kind of think that your software is secure and you pretty much hope it's secure, and you spend hours and hours and hours and hours researching stuff and reading, all the different documentation and all the latest security threats and you code against them and everything. But for me, it was just a really kind of fulfilling experience. We had an excellent team that we contracted in, and they did a phenomenal job. I mean, they got in there it was amazing. All the little details of, so even little minor things that they found, we were just impressed. We'd just be like, wow, I can't believe you even found that. I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but it was like, oh yeah, fix that in 10 minutes. But still, it was like, wow, that's really, you guys really did a good job. And they gave us a great report. So I think that part of the process was great because, you put your life and soul into building a company, and you work so hard on all the code, and all it takes is one smart, intelligent hacker to bring it all down. And there, our customers, they rely on us to be secure. And that's something that we've been very proud of for a long time, that we are secure. And just to have that backing and just assurance that, yes, there's nothing else you could do to be more secure. You guys are solid. And so that was a great process for us. But I think, as far as your question, what would we have done differently? I think for the most part, like I said, we've always from the very beginning treated security with a really high level of importance. I mean, when we're taking credit card information, there are really, other than that, and social security numbers, there really isn't anything that's more dear to the customer. That's something that's so critical to them. There's no way they're going to give you that information unless they have a high level of trust with you. So we, from the very beginning, were very security conscious. I mean, everything we did, all the way down to encrypted hard drives on each one of our team members. I mean, every single thing we do, we make sure that the data is protected, and there really is, there's no way really that we can think of, or that anyone else that we've paid to think of, that can break into our system. And that helps us sleep at night.
That's interesting. Okay, third and final question. You're currently building your new version of your API. What lessons do you have to share with people that are building a service or building a platform and thinking about putting together an API?
I would say with where businesses are going today, I feel an API is one of the most critical things you can do as a company. It's really going to be the thing that launches you beyond just serving a few customers to really serving the world. I've been so passionately excited about improving our API. We as a company, we're built from the ground up to integrate with other systems. From the very beginning, we said we're not going to duplicate data. We're just going to do the cart and the checkout experience. We're not going to do the CMS. We're not going to do inventory management. We're not going to do accounting. We're not going to do customer management, all these different things that a lot of all-in-one e-commerce packages try to do. And unfortunately, they do poorly very often. We took the approach of we are going to just do one part of it, and everything else we're going to integrate with very tightly. So our goal was to make integration very simple. And that started with our XML data feed. So every time you post a transaction, we would encrypt some XML and we send it to your server. Now those are called webhooks, which is, I guess, you know, a standard term for them. But when we did it, there was no name. You know, PayPal had an IPN, and that was kind of the closest thing. And so we, that's the approach we took of like, yeah, we'll get you your data. It's your data. You know, we want you to be able to integrate with whatever you need to integrate with. And as we started going along with that, people started having more needs for that data. They said, well, I kind of need it on demand. I might need to synchronize my customers. I might need to do this, that, and the other. And so we realized we need to make this data accessible on demand. We need an API. And so we started, as a lot of people do, with POX, you know, plain old XML, and just started with the very simple transaction get and things like that. And we started building out these different methods for getting access to your customers, listing out customers, listing out transactions. And eventually we started to get a little more complex and said, oh, well, you can modify that subscription, or, you know, modify this, that, or flip a bit here and there on different fields. And eventually we kind of got this somewhat, you know, we had a pretty good naming convention for our different method calls for the API. But more and more you realize you're just doing CRUD. You're doing the plain old create, update, delete, and select. And we just realized, you know, this is what REST is for. This is what REST is phenomenal at. This is what has made the internet and the structure of the internet through HTTP so phenomenally successful over decades. And we just realized, man, that's where everything is going. You look at a lot of the big players, they're all trying to get closer and closer to the true REST idea. Because what that buys you is the ability to say, hey, look, I have an API and you already know how to use it. And that, I think, is just phenomenal. When I can come in as a developer and say, if I understand get, post, put, and delete, oh, wow, I can understand your basic methods for manipulating your objects. At that point, it's just a matter of syntax. At that point, we just look and say, oh, well, what's your payload look like? What's your, you know, using XML, using JSON? And it just gets you a long way down the field with someone as far as adoption. Right away, they can just say, oh, this is clean. A great example I love to use is Twilio. I mean, their API is so beautiful that I know developers that just love the company because their API is so awesome. Like, we're the same way as a company. We're my business partner, we talk about it all the time. We're like, can we find a reason to use Twilio? It's just so awesome. It's again, they have a beautiful API. And the funny thing with it, and this is probably one of the main things we've learned, is that when it comes to REST APIs, it's really the wild, wild west right now. They are still trying to figure out what Fielding meant in his dissertation. I mean, I've read through that. In the last few weeks, I've done so much research trying to get at what should a RESTful API really look like. And I've just been amazed how there's not a lot of agreement. There are so many different ways to do things when it comes to how you do your hypermedia and your links. Do you use Atom format? Do you use this format? Comes to even one of the ones that I'm kind of focusing on today, actually, is the patch method. It's a new HTTP method that I think came out officially in 11. It's still in draft format, But officially, when you modify an object, you're not supposed to use a put unless it's a complete object. So if you need to do a partial modification, and in our case, you know, hey, I just need to change the email address on that customer, or I need to change the name on that customer. Well, that's supposed to be you can't use a put for that. You're not really supposed to use a post as well. A post is supposed to create an item, mm-hmm. and you're not really sure where it's going to end up. So you post to a URL, and it says, okay, I created this item, and it's over here. These are all the nuances of API development that I've been learning, and it's just – it can be a little overwhelming. Like I said, I've done quite a bit of research, and there's so much more research out there. And it's easy to take the approach of, well, what do the big guys do? You know, what does Netflix do? What does Twitter do? What does Facebook do? And even they do all kinds of different things. Another big piece of the puzzle is OAuth. You know, OAuth is – I kind of come to the conclusion that OAuth is the standard we should all agree on when it comes to authentication and authorization and security, because it's really pretty impressive. I mean, we have a really unique set of constraints when it comes to hosted CMSs. They want to do a very tight integration with our system to downloaded software. Like you mentioned, the WordPress plugins, Foxy Shop and Foxy Press, those are great integrations where all the code is right there. So how do you do security in that context to completely third-party situations? Like we have Consolibyte is a company that does an integration with QuickBooks, and they are completely separate. So that's, again, that third-party OAuth dance. But even with OAuth, is it OAuth 1.0? Is it OAuth 2.0? And 2.0 is still in the draft form, and they're on draft 23, I think, as of this recording. And so we're trying to learn all this stuff, but I would say it's definitely worth it. And we're still in development of our finalizing our REST API, and it's really going to be phenomenal. I'm getting super excited about it. I've learned a ton from a website called apigee.com. I look at them as kind of the standard for learning about APIs and API development. They've got a phenomenal blog that's really, really helped me a lot. Out of a couple of their webcasts, they've got a group they started on Google called API Craft, and I highly recommend it. Even if you're thinking about doing API development, those guys are the experts. I have learned so much with them. Just last week, I posted a question on something, and literally, I posted late at night. The next morning, I had 9 replies. I mean, it's wow. Just an amazing community, really, really active. You know, they really care about doing it right, which is great. The challenge is, like I said, no one can really agree on what right means in every situation. There's just a lot of different ways to do it. And so one of the things that we're looking towards in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months is hopefully be a thought leader as far as the API REST API development, because we were even just talking about this the other day, the idea of possibly creating a sandbox where people could kind of just play and say, oh, I need to learn REST. Even if you're not going to use FoxyCard, and even if you don't want to, have anything to do with it, you probably understand the concept of users and stores and transactions. The ideas, the concept, when we talk about REST, the representations of those ideas, you probably understand. So it might be a good place to learn how to do REST and say, well, here's a standard we can all point to and say, well, this is how a good REST API should do it. Again, we're nowhere near there yet. I'm learning every single day, but that's kind of our long-term, you know, big gigantic goal, is to be a kind of a place you can go to learn how to use a REST API, because hopefully ours will follow as many of the standards as we can agree upon today. And it again, though, back to what you were mentioning about platform, it's so important. I think you look at Facebook. One of the reasons Facebook is so phenomenally successful is they decided, we're not just going to be a website. We're going to enable companies like Zynga to be multi-billion dollar companies, because they built a platform other people could build their businesses on top of. And we're cautious even to use that word platform when it comes to our system, because for the longest time we weren't there. And even now, I tentatively say we're on the beginning of being a platform. The reason I can say that is, again, because of systems like FoxyE, Foxy Press, Foxy Shop, people that have built entire companies integrating on top of our system. So that, in a sense, I say, okay, from that standpoint, yes, we are a platform. But our vision is so big to be a worldwide international solution that we're just tip of the iceberg right now. And a big part of that is our API development. Our API has to be flexible, has to be adoptable by people that already, again, understand the basic concepts of how to integrate and communicate with our system. So we're really excited about the API. And if you want to take your business in a way that really we've just seen phenomenal things. We love looking at what our customers do. It's like, oh my goodness, they're using our system to do that. It's phenomenal. It's amazing. And you can only do that if you provide a tool set that is flexible and open, and people can say, wow, you know, I can build my business however I want. I'm not limited by the tools. And mm-hmm. and an API allows you to do that. If there's something that your standalone built-in system doesn't do, as long as they can get into there from the back end and manipulate data and make decisions, it's just been amazing. It's been really phenomenal what we've seen. And we're excited about where we're going.
Excellent. It's fun because this is one of the few interviews I'm doing with a video turned on, and so I can actually see your face light up as you start talking about this. I've got to start recording video just so other people can share in that, because I talk to people a lot, and you know, when I see them talk about their passion, and obviously this is your passion, and things like REST and APIs, I see them their faces just light up and they start smiling while they're talking, and it's wonderful.
I'm definitely passionate about it. I say if anything, I sometimes have to tone it down.
Okay. The question we ask everybody: what's your local user group? And this was an easy one for you. And what is the URL?
NashvillePHP.org. The funny thing is, I was probably a lurker for the longest time in that group. I'd get all the emails, and I'd always be like, "Oh man, I really need to go to that group." And probably for about a year. And it wasn't really until I kind of transitioned to full-time working on my own that I was able to really create my own schedule. I wasn't working every single night and through the weekends on my side business, but I was actually doing it full-time, that I was able to join the community. I believe that's actually where we met, Cal.
Sure is.
It's where I've met some just incredible people. I've learned so much from them. And the great thing about the guys there is, you know, we get together for beers. We get together just to hang out. We get together just to talk more than just PHP and talk and shop, and really build some great friendships out of that group. And that's something I value so much. And it's helped me realize you can only get so far on your own. If your idea is big enough that you can do it, it's not a big enough idea. Think it too small. And these relationships I've begun to build, they're just so, so important to me. They mean so much to me. And a big part of that is just connecting with the Nashville PHP user group.
Mm. Well, excellent. Well, thank you, Luke, for being a part of Voices of the Elephant, and thanks for being a part of Nashville PHP and for all that you do for the community there. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and thanks for kind of bringing me under your wing and introducing me to so many great people and great things. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.
Engine Yard is a proud supporter of the Voices of the Elephant podcast. We're a leader in cloud-based platform as a service, and you may have heard of our Orchestra PHP platform, which is designed to let you focus on writing awesome PHP apps. Basically, we save you time and money and keep your app up and running for you. For more information, you can hang out with us on IRC at @Orchestra on Freenode, or for more information, you can also go to our website at engineyard.com/products/orchestra.